Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
So instead of just giving the healthy message to the parents and them trying to get the kids to follow through, we wanted to involve the kids as well, because the more the kids are involved with their healthy eating, the more likely that they are to do it.
That's Stacy Radford Vincent. She and her son Forrest came into the Earth Eats studios to talk about why it's important to get kids involved in cooking. Forrest even shares a couple of his favorite recipes with us. Harvest Public Media chats with some wheat farmers who are very concerned about this year's projected yields. We visit the gorgeous Willowfield Lavender Farm in the second half of the show. And Chef Daniel Orr presents three recipes: guacamole, gazpacho, and shrimp on the grill. Nice. The Earth Eats news team has the week off, so no news headlines. But the folks at Harvest Public Media are always hard at work. Their latest story comes from wheat fields across the country. It's been a tough year for many winter wheat farmers, and it looks like it could only get tougher. In Kansas, the largest winter wheat producer, the USDA reports that 45% of the winter wheat crop is in poor or very poor condition. In Nebraska, it's more than half the crop, and in Colorado, it's a full 70%. Some farmers will have no crop at all. As Mike Tobias reports for Harvest Public Media, it could be an historically low harvest for some wheat producers.
Every year, Dan Hughes plants 2,000 or so acres of hard red winter wheat. It's a crop that's common where he farms, Chase and Perkins counties in the southwest corner of Nebraska. It's mostly dry land acres, not irrigated, and it doesn't rain here as much as other parts of the state. But wheat usually does well in this environment. Usually. So if I were to walk through your wheat fields right now, what would I see?
It's burning up. It's going from that dark green to emerald green that would be a healthy plant to more of a pale, kind of a pea green, a split pea soup type of green. You know, you can just see that the plant is being stressed for moisture.
And there isn't any. It was already dry when Hughes planted last fall. There wasn't much snow over the winter, and there wasn't much rain in western Nebraska this spring.
From my area, west and south, most of the wheat has hit the wall. We're losing bushels every day, and there's not that many bushels out there to lose, but we're past the point of no return. I don't know that the rain right now would even do us any good.
Hughes says he expects to harvest 15 to 20 bushels an acre from these fields later this summer. That's less than half a normal crop. And Hughes isn't alone. Nebraska farmers are expected to harvest around 45 million bushels of wheat this year, according to the latest USDA projection. That would be 25 million bushels less than normal, and the lowest amount since 1944. Roy Shaneman, executive director of the Nebraska Wheat Board, says Nebraska's low wheat harvest projection is influenced some by a reduction in the number of acres planted to wheat over the years, with farmers planting more corn and soybeans instead. But this historic low is mostly a reflection of poor growing conditions.
A number of the producers that I have contact with, their crop didn't even come up in the fall. It didn't get enough moisture and actually came up in the spring. And basically what that does, kind of weakens that plant. It has more susceptibility maybe to some disease pressures. You don't have the growth in the spring, so that crop's behind all through the season.
This year's wheat crop is among the worst Bob Klein, University of Nebraska-Lincoln Western crop specialist, has ever seen. And he's been working with farmers for more than 50 years. Klein says wheat producers lose twice with these conditions because of a common crop rotation practice where farmers plant wheat, then a different crop like corn, then allow the ground to idle for a season before starting over.
Not only do we have a poor wheat crop, but then we don't have the good crop residue, the wheat residue, to plant corn in or grain sorghum or another crop next year in 2014. So we usually find out here in western Nebraska, if we don't produce a good wheat crop, the success of our spring planted crops like corn and grain sorghum the next year really goes down a lot.
Klein says wheat growers have few options.
Some of those people are destroying those stands and replanting other crops. A number of them are leaving them and so forth because they want that residue to protect the soil.
McCook, Nebraska farmer Randy Peters got timely rain on some fields, so he's going to harvest his wheat, although he expects half the crop of last year. But with fields that look even worse, Peters says many of his neighbors have already given up on this year's wheat.
You don't go too many miles any direction, and there's over half the wheat's been tore up, and insurance has been taken on it.
But even with insurance, Peters says half a crop or less is still a large financial hit for producers.
Hopefully, you know, the insurance will keep you going another year to pay all the bills that have to be paid.
Royce Shaneman.
Crop insurance maybe helps you keep the lights on, but you're certainly not making headway. It'd be a lot better just to get the crop.
One possible bright spot, Shaneman thinks the wheat that survived has potential to be high in protein, which could mean it's worth a little more. But that's a small bright spot for producers like Dan Hughes, dealing with one of the worst wheat crops he's seen since he started farming in the mid-1970s. He's optimistic, though. His dryland corn is looking good so far, and he's going to leave the wheat until harvest and see what happens.
I'm still hopeful that we'll run a combine over it and get, you know, 10 to 20 bushels. Like I tell my banker every time I see him, a good rain's a-coming. If you weren't an optimist, you better not be a farmer.
For Harvest Public Media, I'm Mike Tobias.
Read and listen to more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org. And we've got the food news world covered on our Twitter feed and Facebook page. Find us by searching for Earth Eats. The first question I always ask guests in the Earth Eats studios is what they've had for lunch. It helps set the levels on the microphone. Few people have been as excited about that question as Forrest.
Peppers, small peppers, and some seaweed, and some Doritos, and I also had some carrots. I ate carrots, and that's pretty much it.
That is 6-year-old Forrest Radford Vincent.
F-O-R-E-S-T.
And his mom.
Stacy Radford Vincent, Program and Outreach Manager at Wonder Lab.
She's the coordinator of a program at the Wonder Lab called Kids in the Kitchen. Their first event was called Sugar Sleuths. It gave parents the tools to read ingredients labels and, more specifically, to recognize all the different names for sugary sweeteners that are included in a lot of processed foods. Stacy said it was also important to give the kids the opportunity to make food themselves.
So instead of just giving the healthy message to the parents and them trying to get the kids to follow through, we wanted to involve the kids as well, because the more the kids are involved with their healthy eating, the more likely that they are to do it. It's also about learning what's in your food, knowing what's in there, and getting kids used to the taste of real food. But we also wanted the kids to learn that there's a difference between a fruit snack and a strawberry, even though they both taste, you know, they both taste good and they're both sweet, but that whole food is better for them.
Forrest was a presenter that day. He demonstrated how to make avocado banana pudding. First, he started with knife safety.
Well, first, let me tell you how to hold it so you don't cut yourself. Keep your fingers away from the knife. Move them as you cut. Then I put it in a bag and everyone mashed it with their fists.
Start back. What are the ingredients?
Avocado and banana, that's the ingredients for it. One slice of each. And then you cut it up into pieces. But you don't like cut it up like mincing it. That's not it. You just cut it up in slices and then put it in the bag and mush it. And then you can eat it. It was really good.
Stacy and her husband got Forrest involved in cooking right away when he was 2 years old.
basically when he could stand on a stool, we would let him be in there while we were doing stuff and, you know, let him measure things with the spoon or stir something. And then we progressively have moved up to more advanced things. So he's actually, well, like you heard, he knows the difference between mincing and slicing. We can tell him to chop something or to slice it, and he knows how to do that.
Yeah.
And he's really good with measuring things out. And it's been a great way to teach him some math skills. Yeah. So we have been starting to become familiar with fractions, knowing what 1/2 looks like and 1/4 looks like.
Yeah. 1/8 is 8 slices out of 1.
That's right.
Yeah. Very smart, ain't I?
Forrest likes vegetables now, but Stacy knows that sometimes he chooses a donut over, say, an apple. And that's okay. She just hopes that these food values will stay with him when he eventually leaves the house to go be on his own.
As I was growing up, we were real healthy eaters. And when I got to my teenage years, I was not the healthiest eater. But then when I went away to college, all of those things came back to me. And those skills that I could cook, I didn't have to order pizza every night, that I could cook my own meals. And, you know, now we do it out of fun.
They've made butter and cheese at home. With a little prodding, Forrest can recite a basic homemade cheese recipe.
Well, you pretty much need milk.
Some yogurt. Some yogurt. Plain yogurt.
Plain yogurt, yeah.
And then what do we put in it to separate it?
Vinegar.
There you go.
And then we pretty much cook it, let cool, and it's done. You can eat it.
You know, sometimes you can't control what your kids are going to eat, you know, when they're at school and, you know, they have to make their own choices. But when they're at home, then it's even that much more important to make sure that they're getting those nutrients at home.
Stacy Radford Vincent and her son Forrest came into the Earth Eats studios to talk about kids in the kitchen. WonderLab also offers food classes for older kids and adults called Savory Science. That's where you learn about the science behind, say, cheese making, and then you get to make some cheese yourself. Get details about the programs at wonderlab.org. Coming up.
You know, if you've got rosemary plants at home and they get kind of these strong branches on them, you can use these as your brochettes or your skewers.
Great idea.
So rosemary does get almost like a pine tree, you know, so they are quite strong.
Chef Daniel Orr is getting creative with our second recipe today. He's got some very simply seasoned shrimp that he skewers onto some rosemary stems. Just pluck the leaves off, put those aside for another recipe, and there you go. Skewers that can be tossed into the compost bin at the end of the meal instead of being added to the mass of dirty dishes. This is a cool recipe. Stay with us. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage and hatha yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. A couple weeks ago, we enjoyed a tasty lavender lemonade recipe. Today, we're going one step back in the process, and we're visiting a lavender farm. Our friends at WTIU's The Weekly Special visited Willowfield Lavender Farm in Mooresville, Indiana, and spoke with the owner, Kieran O'Connor.
Behind me, 15 years ago, was a cornfield. Knowing that I was getting ready to retire from the Indianapolis Fire Department, I wanted to grow something here and have a small business instead of going to work for someone else. My wife, Libby, at 5 o'clock in the morning woke me up one day and said, "How about lavender?" And I said, "Cool, that'd be great." So we became the first lavender farm in the state. We put 100 plants in the ground and we were off and running. There are hundreds of varieties of lavender that grow all over the world. We've gotten it down to 4. We have 2 hybrid lavenders. The strongest smelling is probably Grosso. It can get 7 foot wide on the West Coast. Here it gets about half of that because of our winters. Then the other one is Provence. It's the cooking lavender. At one time, we had 35 different varieties of lavender here, and these have been the proven ones that have come down. Lavender needs at least 6 hours of hot sun every day. It needs well-drained soil, rocky, limey. It likes it on the alkaline side. And do not overwater it. I'm telling you, after 12 years, I still don't feel like an expert. The plants always tell me something different. They are the experts, and they are always teaching me. There's something new every year. And that's what keeps us stimulated. The weeding, all that is done by hand. There are no sprays. There are no herbicides or pesticides. Besides, there are so many neat little bugs that are around here that if you spray, you never get to enjoy those things. Lavender has just kind of become a culture. And so we have a little retail shop in our barn where we sell these products, lotions and soaps and candles and sachets. 15 years ago, I was probably crawling down some hallway with a top floor of a building on fire. I thought that was a pretty stimulating, exciting lifestyle as it was, but to go from that to a gentleman farmer as growing lavender, no, I had no idea I would be doing this. We just have this lifestyle that is just constantly stimulated and creative, so it's all good.
It's at times like this that I wish radio had smell-o-vision. The farm was just so aromatic and beautiful. Watch the video at eartheats.org. We talked about a banana avocado pudding in the first half of our show. Not too many avocado recipes in the Earth Eats archives, but I did uncover this gem for sweet pea guacamole.
What I like about the sweet peas is that it's very low in fat. It has a really nice sweet flavor. And I take it, another step by adding the tofu, which adds a nice protein source. So it's very lean, but it has a lot of flavor in it. And it's so simple. All you need is a good blender. I'm going to add some silken tofu, which is the soft tofu. You'll find that in your produce section in the grocery store. It's almost like when you puree it, it's almost like a sour cream or yogurt texture to it. All right, so we have that. We're going to add the sweet peas. And these sweet peas have just been blanched, which means cooked in some boiling salted water until the skins become tender. And then we shock them in ice water. I'm going to add a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. I'm going to add some garlic, and a lot of times you'll see garlic that has this little green sprout coming out of it, and that's the germ of the garlic. It's the plant actually trying to grow, all right? And what you want to do is you want to remove that. And the reason you do that is if people have problem digesting garlic, it's usually this is what they're having trouble with. Okay, I've got some chopped ginger. Okay, I'm going to chop up that garlic. And just kind of do a rustic cut. It's going to be pureed anyhow. I added a nice handful of mint, which is going to take it to another level of flavor, and some hot sauce. All right, and then basically it's just a matter of pureeing it. And I got to turn on the electricity to do that.
I'll spare you the couple minutes of blending you'll need to do at this point. Doesn't exactly make for good radio, you know.
Okay, we have a really nice smooth consistency now, and I'm going to add a little fresh cracked pepper. Always use fresh pepper. If you buy that ground pepper, it's been probably ground for a year or two, so it's lost a lot of its essential oils and all the aroma. Okay, a little bit of kosher salt. You're just going to blend one more time.
Okay, as always,
you're going to taste and make sure that you've got the good flavor. Place some of our homemade corn tortilla chips. Decorate it with a little fresh mint sprig.
And there you go. You won't mistake this for avocado-based guacamole, but it is tasty enough that it might earn a spot in your dip arsenal. Find the recipe at eartheats.org. The farmer's market is full of cucumbers these days. Enjoy them raw with some hummus or in a salad. Perhaps you're pickling cucumbers to enjoy months down the road. Here is a recipe idea that uses plenty of cucumbers. No tomatoes for this one. It's our green gazpacho.
Even back in the old days in the old country in Spain, they made green gazpachos, sometimes even with almonds and grapes. So there are a lot of, there have always been lots of different flavors of gazpacho. Today we're doing a green gazpacho, and we're going to start by tossing in a bunch of green stuff.
All right.
So we've got some onion tops. You could use scallions, but we're using everything that we can out of the garden. So we're going to add some of those.
Some stuff that you would probably normally throw away.
Yeah, a lot of people would. Not me. I don't throw anything away.
Of course not.
I'm a Scotsman. Learned that from my dad. All right, and then we're going to add our cucumbers. We have about 6 cucumbers.
This is great because I have so many cucumbers right now. I'm choking on cucumbers.
This time of year, this is the best time to use them up. I use cucumbers I run through my juicer with some lime juice and mint and make a really nice cucumber lemonade. All right, and to this we're going to add our yogurt. We've got some garlic. Just slice that up to help the blender puree it. A little bit of olive oil. Another about 1/4 cup. Got a little ginger.
Ginger and garlic, 2 flavors that you add to a lot of your recipes.
It
adds a nice little pink.
It does. And then we're going to add some herbs. I've got some of that nice little micro basil. And we've got some mint. Mint and cucumbers really are a nice marriage.
Green, green, and more green.
And more green. We're going to add also a little bit of my Don't Let Your Man Go hot sauce. Gives it that little kick.
And that's got a little bit of a sweet taste
to
it, right?
Yeah. Okay, and we'll just put that on go. Maybe just a touch more salt. And then a fun thing to do with a gazpacho is to serve it in a big bowl, and then you can surround it with all of your different garnishes. So we've got some cucumbers, got some red peppers, got some fresh herbs. You could also do some kernels of corn. You could use the little grape cherry tomatoes or the currant tomatoes. You could put a little bowl of crab meat out if people wanted some crab meat or some diced shrimp. Just give it a little final taste. Really, really good. Great way to get your veggies.
Another grilling recipe for your summertime cookout needs. A few weeks ago, we did salmon on a cedar plank. Sticking with fish today, Chef Orr has some shrimp ready to go. The skewers are the attention-grabbing part of this recipe.
You know, if you've got rosemary plants at home and they get kind of these strong branches on them, you can use these as your brochettes or your skewers.
Great idea.
So rosemary does get almost like a pine tree, you know, so they are quite strong. I'm going to use some of these smaller ones. I'm going to leave a little bit on just to give it some flavor and a little bit of flair, all right? And we'll take a little bit of this rosemary, rough chop it. Keep it coarse. Some of that will fall through the grill and get smoky and kind of perfume and smoke the brochettes as they cook. I'm going to add juice of 1/2 lemon. And then we'll save the other half to squeeze over them after they come off the grill. Okay, we've got some chopped garlic. We've got some chili powder. And I put a little bit of smoked paprika in there, too.
Nice.
That's going to help accent the smokiness of the grill. We're going to throw in about 1 teaspoon of lime zest. You could use lemon zest, too. A little bit of salt. And finally, just a touch of olive oil. You don't want your marinades that when you're going to be grilling items to be too oily, because that will send a lot of flares up, and your meat will taste like kerosene. So always go very light on the oil. Now we take these and skewer them onto the rosemary.
I feel like I should be helping you. Just staring at you do this.
I'm used to it by now.
All right, well then keep going. You're doing great.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, so nice sunny afternoon in southern Indiana. We've got our grill preheated, and we can do these over pretty high heat.
This is good. It won't take too long to cook, right? So we don't have to be over the hot grill for too long?
Absolutely. These are going to cook really quickly. And another great thing about using these skewers is that the shrimp will be easy to turn. Usually you'd have to turn all the individual pieces. This way, you can just turn them a bunch at a time. All right, and here we have our plate. We've got some mezclan salad and then a nice barley salad on top of that. And what I do a little differently with the barley is I'll toast it with a little olive oil in the pan I'm going to cook it in. And so you can see it's got a little brown, and it gets a nutty flavor to it. So it adds a whole different complexity to the salad. And then we just threw in whatever fresh herbs, a little bit of citrus juice, and some extra virgin olive oil, salt, pepper. Very, very simple. What we really want to do is enjoy the taste of the marinade of the shrimp, and that will be kind of a nice semi-bland foil for the shrimp, because the shrimp will have a little bit of heat from that chili powder and smoked paprika. Got a little more of this marinade with all those nice chunky pieces of garlic. We can get those on top of there.
I have a lot of rosemary. I'm going to make this dish, but then I'm still going to have some left over. How else would you use rosemary in other dishes?
One of my secret seasonings is anytime I cook something, I'll throw like especially a pasta sauce or tomato sauce. I'll take the garlic with some extra virgin olive oil, let it get nutty brown, and then throw in a handful of rosemary leaves. Let those get a little bit crispy, and then throw your tomato sauce in, and it just gives this real rustic, homey Italian flavor to it. And you see how that rosemary is burning a little bit? That's adding this aroma, this perfume. I'll close this down just for a minute so that it gets a little more smoky flavor.
So now at this point when you need a beer and
yes.
some friends to talk to.
I think we can arrange that.
Yeah.
All right, and one of the key things you don't want to do with any kind of fish, shrimp included, is to overcook it. All right, so you just want the very, minimum of pinkness in the middle. So you get it marked on one side. See how easy it is to flip them over? Let's squeeze a little lemon juice over the top and give her a taste.
Find these three recipes and oh so many more on the website. And write us a comment. Let us know what you think of the program. EarthEats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Forrest and Stacy Radford Vincent, and everyone at Harvest Public Media and WTIU. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage and hatha yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Thanks for listening. Hope to hear from you again next week. I'm Annie Corrigan.